This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Logo Daedalus. Logo, it's great having you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
And I'm also joined here with Matt Pagan.
Yep, good to be here. Great to meet you online, Logo.
Oh, I was just saying, nice to meet you, man. Just being polite, my newfound Texas manners, you know.
So, Logo, what have you been up to since the last time we talked?
Lots of stuff, man. Working on a couple of different things, but, you know, a lot of reading, obviously, but, yeah, just, like, trying to figure out what the fuck's going on or what the situation is, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, the scene that you're part of. I guess some people might describe, it doesn't really have a label, but some people might describe it as post-right, and it seems like the last time we talked, you were fairly obscure, but your following has, grown dramatically, so... How would you categorize the following or scene that you're part of?
I don't know. I mostly like me and Compot, like we've been friends for a long time and like we work on like stuff together and like kind of have a similar interest and like similar reading habits and particularly. And it's like things have just like, this is like just the nature of like the ecology where like, you know, it's more like about like individuals than it is about like particular scenes. And like, you know, there'll be like little groups that rise up and then like scatter and like that just... This has been happening since, like, 2012, but, like, Compot and I go way back, so, yeah, we're just, like, good friends, really, more than anything.
Yeah, it's interesting how, it's kind of, there's different little tribes and groups on Twitter, and some of it is, I guess, ideological or philosophical, some of it's, like, aesthetic, and some of it's just, like, who you know and who can say, and then there's different imputing that happens, but...
I think that like the weakest coalitions generally are like the ones that are based off of like an ideology or like some ostensible aesthetic. Like usually if you're like thinking like I used to get put into a lot of these sorts of group chats and I'd have to leave them where it's like, you know, like it would be like, you know, blank Twitter chat or whatever. Like there was like, you know, like I was in Med Twitter for a while. That was kind of like way back in the day. I'm not even Mediterranean, but like, you know, like. So, like, people create the... But, like, I just, like, you know... I just more, like individuals, particularly... And, like, I don't really care about, like, the ideological affiliation. Just more, like, people kind of seem to, like, get it or have something interesting to say.
Yeah, I think those, like, bonds of, I guess, friendship end up running a lot deeper than anything else.
That's, like, where we... That was the great lesson of Orc Brand back in the day, whose friendship brand. It was all just about, like, you know, you just... Like, your friends are your friends. That's the real... That's the only real... part of it in the end.
Yeah,
but I would say that like during this whole like quarantine and stuff, like there has just been a lot of shuffling of just like people's interpretations of what's going on because it's such an absurd situation and kind of no one really knows what's going on. But yeah. in that kind of confusion or in the darkness, like you kind of are exposing like your latent ideology by trying by like, you know, this like totally like ridiculous scenario where you're like, you can see how people like form their worldview in like real time, especially with like these kind of like in unprecedented situations.
Mm-hmm. More so. Yeah, these crisis moments. Yeah. I think you've said, and even Robert and I have said, how, you know, especially things like the riots, the protests that happened a couple weeks ago, just make people revert back to their, you know, their less nuanced, their baser kind of version of whatever ideology they're coming from. And yeah, as you said, it shows. Where people are ultimately coming from, like where their ultimate, I guess, allegiances or proclivities lie.
Yeah, and people go, like, kind of mask off mode in ways that, like the thing that I just keep laughing about, like, I'm thinking about it right now and kind of chuckling, is Charlie Kirk doing the FBI crime statistics.
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, such a funny, like, it's like, oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah, no, it's,
my observations of when that happened, so that was the initial response. Like, that was the day there was really bad looting, and you had people like Charlie Kirk and some people, like, similar to him saying stuff that was, like, that you're not usually going to expect. But now if you go to Charlie Kirk's Twitter, he's back to his old antics. So he's saying his response to, like, statues being vandalized is that many of the racist statues were of Democrats. So he's back to his old self.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, that's honestly, like, I kind of, like... Like, this is the thing that a lot of, like, the right grifters, like, don't understand. It's, like, that he's doing the same shit they're doing. He just knows how to sell it to, like, a wider audience, you know? Like, if it really comes down to it, he'll start dropping the FBI crime statistics. But he's just a much more talented ideologue because he can, like, go up and down. He can, like, dial in, like, it's like that old meme, like, what's the proper amount of racism, right? You have, like, the little dial, like, how much can I put in here, like, for this audience? So he can, like, tune it in and tune it out, and then you go right back to, like, the Democrats are the real racists, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Play the hits, baby. Play the hits.
Do you think a lot of the kind of responses, different responses, like this, like the nationalist response, kind of boomer conservatism, or just kind of, like, crass racism, there's obviously, like, a visceral, emotional responses, but would you almost say... Yeah, the whole idea about, like, fighting to save Western civilization, would you say that they're copes, like, as the incels would say?
I guess you could say that. I think it's just more like, it's like, I just think of it in terms of, like, operant conditioning at this point. Like, it's just, like, Pavlovian, like, learned response, like, by, like, this is, like, how, like, ideology functions, is it, like, takes over your brain. So it's, like, these people have subjected themselves to, like, a kind of MKUltra program of, like, this particular viewpoint or whatever it happens to be, for whatever reason they ended up there, and they kind of just like that it trains their immediate responses to things.
So when this when the really civil unrest really got out of control, like, did you personally have a really strong visceral emotional reaction at first?
No, it's all nonsense. Like, this happens, like, the thing is like, I feel like it's like everyone's goldfish and they're like, oh, like, this is crazy, but it's like, no, this sort of shit is, like, historically normal. Like, if you look through, like, most of American history, you're hard-pressed to find a year that there wasn't, like, massive rioting or protest somewhere for some reason. Like, it's like, this is just, like, how things work. And it's, like, not that, like, I'm not gonna, like, freak out about a Target burning down. That was, like, how it all started, right, and stuff like that. It's, like, it doesn't really have any, it's real value, like, the actual, like, material facts on the ground are like not that those don't really matter because what people are really talking about is like what role it plays like in the media cycle, like how what its narrative, what does the story of it mean, right, is what the real battle is being fought over. What actually happened is totally irrelevant and we won't really know for a while, and when we do, no one will care anymore. We might never, you know, it could be like a Las Vegas type situation where everyone has like an interpretation of what happened. And then we just go like, oh, like actually there's like no motivation and the case is closed. Like, don't think about it. And you know what? We can just do that. We can just march on past these sorts of things. Also, if they're not of use to an ideology.
Yeah. And a lot of people on the right, they view this as a communist insurrection, the left wing power grab.
Yeah, it's pathetic. Like, if this is a power grab, like, it's like, it's a farce. Like, actually, like, you know, the smarter take is that, like, they're letting themselves embarrass themselves. Like, the cops, like, you know, by, like, retreating and letting them, like, just, like, fuck around, like how they're doing in the autonomous zone. Just, like, this total nonsense, like...
I wonder, I mean...
It's discrediting. Like
from the more genuine... ideologues among their ranks, I think they're ultimately embarrassing themselves. But what about, like, you know, all the corporations and this kind of this more elite sort of punch or shift leftward that we see a lot of, you know,
leftward.
Well, there is.
not left economically, but let's say culturally leftward. To me, that might be real and have.
It's like I would say like pluralist is like what you're looking for, and what that really means is like, oh, so like they like these corporations are all thinking that like this demographic is going to be like more profitable as like a long term investment of advertising to them, like right, like they're not making these decisions based off of like an ideology. They're looking at like projections on like returns. Like, if it's profitable, they're going to do it. Like, it's beyond, like, left or right at, like, these sorts of questions. Like, this is just, like, it's, like, consumer demographics, right? You want to, like, maximize your, consumption. So you find, like, these sorts of, like, this is great press, right? Like, people within the corporations, right, are also pressuring to have corporations do these sorts of things because there's people whose jobs it is to make sure these things happen, right? Like, it's their job to, like, follow the news cycle or whatever and like take advantage of it for their own press. Like that's what how it really works. I don't know if they're like, you know, sitting around and like, you know, they're like, oh, like what do we think about America? You know what I mean? Like
I don't think so. I don't think it's that intellectual. Like they're actually moving to the left or wherever in an intellectual way. I think you summed it up fairly well. I do wonder if certain aspects of the degree of outpouring of support we're seeing will kind of stand as a lasting cultural change rather than just another empty media cycle frenzy.
Well, like what would change? Like do you like
I don't know. Yeah.
So like this is like, you know, it always comes like I'm always like, well, what's like specifically going to happen or whatever. It's like, oh, like what legislation do you think is like going to get moved? Like to me what it seems to be really doing is like trying to like make it more as abstract as possible with a lot of like the kind of hubbub around like defunding the police and people like have a lot of different ideas about that. But this is just going to be like, you know, like vote for Biden. We'll have a discussion about doing that. Like now there's not gonna be any results, but there'll be a promise like discussion of this. Like we'll get rid of Trump. We'll put that. So it's like, that's ultimately like where that's going. Right.
Do you think a lot of the things going on, even some of the censorship, like HBO taking down Gone with the Wind, kind of like the what you said about consumer catering to a consumer market, growing consumer market, the whole defunding the police thing. Yeah, I mean, that could very well be symbolic, or even with the autonomous zone in Seattle, Chaz, there is some kind of debate, like some people think that it's seriously undermining the system, allowing people to form their own semi-autonomous zones or communities, but it could just be a way to kind of let them kind of blow off steam. And then, I mean, you just think we could just go back to business as usual, like we could have Joe Biden, and he could be like a sort of like 90s style like Clinton Democrat. But you also have to take into account that we're in one of the worst economic crises in history.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but it also doesn't feel like it. It is, but it like isn't, like at the same time. Like, there's a lot of people, like, because there's still this like sense that things are going to go back to normal like when things open up, and it's like if the protests all they do is to like, you know, serve like basically it's like so now all these people, like now the government is like trying to like make things go back to normal more so that there's less protests, right? So it's like, are we just going to like open all the businesses and stuff again just so like people will stop protesting? And if that's just the case, then this is just how, like, it's just more about like the direction of resources, right? It'll organize to the point where it becomes stable for the benefit of like the continuity of these major corporations. Yeah, like, they're not going to go down. Like, they'll fucking do what it takes to keep themselves kicking.
Yeah. I gotta say I was at the mall today and everything felt normal.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, I'm in Texas, so like the kind of like people taking it seriously or not seriously has been like always in flux, and it's like depending on where you are, people have masks or they don't, and it's kind of like just like a fashion choice at this point, almost. Like there's some places that have rules about it, but there's some that don't. So it's like, and it's not enforced. Like there's not, like, no one's enforcing anything. Like it's just like it's the weirdest thing. It's like the total, you get to see like people's reflections of their understanding of the situation.
It almost feels like all this, like all these events going on, like it feels like it's like a VR simulation. It's not reality, and that could just be because of our psychologically how our brains are wired. It's maybe spending too much time like consuming news and online and social media, but it does feel more like a simulation than an actual like historic turning point.
Yeah, it's like everything that used to just be on Twitter, I don't know, you feel it more in real life now. Just the things people say, the dynamics, they feel more...
that's
kind of like a simulation.
Well, I mean, that's like, you know, this is like what Baudrillard's talking about, right? And that was a while ago. He was saying like the Gulf War like happened on TV, where it's like so many things just happen on TV now.
Yeah, I know. And when we're all, you know, quarantined at home, it's so palpable, that effect. I mean, I feel like the civil unrest for me, that was all on Twitter. And Corona has, you know, pretty much been for me all on Twitter. And it's odd. And this is stuff like, yeah, I've read Baudrillard, you know, in college and stuff. It's stuff that you have this sense of as a younger person, but it never feels all-encompassing, but it is beginning to feel all-encompassing.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky. Like, it's been kind of freaking me out recently, because, like all this is sort of tied to, like, I've been reading, like, more and more Kajev, because he was, like, the one who came up with the concept of the end of history, and not really in the same way, like, Fukuyama gets credited with this, but Fukuyama's interpretation of it is, like, kind of wrong. He doesn't really understand, like, what he meant by the end of history. Because he, like, Kajev was saying that, like, history ended in, like, 1806, and, like, since then it's just been economic arrangements. Like, there's no, like, real politics. Like, things have just been,
arrangements. Or sort of, all these political events, it feels like the MAGA boomer response would be this is a communist insurrection. But it almost feels like all these political events, including the civil unrest, they're all just kind of, feels like they're consumer choices.
Well, it's like, not only that, but it's like, it's like, you talk to these boomers, and it's like, well, like, do you even know, like, any, like, do you know how these, like, anarcho-communist people, like, are? Do you know, like, how, like, do you know any of them, like, personally? Have you read any of the books they've read? Like, what is your understanding of where they're coming from? Like, if you had to describe how they would describe themselves, what would it sound like? And it's like, they usually are, like, totally incapable of doing this. Like, they can't reconstruct, like, the other mind that they're, like, so terrified of here. But it's like, if you're terrified of these, like, anarcho-communists, it's because you've never, like, fucking actually talked to them in real life. Like, they're not capable of doing it. They're not going to do shit. Like, they can't even do their dishes.
Huh.
They can't fucking have a garden. Like, look at the chairs.
Oh, yeah.
It's pathetic.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Yeah, it is. So it's interesting because with, like, right-wingers, they really like to point out, like, moral hypocrisy. So they'll point out, like, statues. Obviously, the really ridiculous one is, like, Charlie Kirk saying, like, the Democrats, the slaveholders were Democrats, and that's pretty cringe. But more like, base people will point out, like, they'll point out about Muhammad, is like, slavery and Islam, and they'll say, like, point out, like, mosques and stuff like that, and then, or they'll point out the whole, like, the autonomous zone, how Randy Weaver, how he was treated by the government. So a big theme is moral hypocrisy. And that's also, like, if you've read Tucker Carlson's book, Ship of Fools, that's, like, a main thing, pointing out, like, moral hypocrisy. But I mean, I used to, but at this point, like, I actually don't think it's an effective strategy.
Oh, it's not. It's not at all. No one cares. Like, everyone, like, this is, like, the thing is, like, if you can benefit from being a hypocrite, like, why, like, what's the point in caring? Like, you know, it's gesturing towards this, like, other set of values, which they don't even actually have, right? Because, like, it's, like, values of, like, good faith hermeneutics, fundamentally, like, trying to actually, like, engage with what these people are saying, but they're not willing to do that either, you know? Like, they don't actually, they're not interested. Like, they're like, I already know that. I already know, like, what they stand for, right? Like, they stand for all the bad things, like, and it's like, especially when it comes down to, like, on an individual to an individual level, like, it differs so much, like, what people actually think the things that they're doing mean, or, like, where they're coming from, or, like, what their beliefs are. It's usually a bunch of, like, contradictory nonsense.
Well, with the, like, push to remove and destroy a lot of these monuments, do you think that there is, like, a real push to erase history? I mean, it has been, like, a tactic, it's been a tactic in war, in many cases, like the Protestant versus Catholic conflict.
Yeah, like
in
iconoclasm.
Yeah, iconoclasm, Islamic extremists, like destroying pre-Islamic sites in the Middle East, the Brahmin Buddhas in Afghanistan, and what ISIS did in Syria with Palmyra.
Yeah, no, there is like something to the iconoclasm, but to me, it's sort of like just like already happened fundamentally, like in a deeper way. where like the connection to these events and like as like extant things as opposed to just like symbols within like the ideology, like is like the actual study of history and the historical circumstances that these people are embedded in is like not something anyone gives a shit about. And like the stories that the narratives people have been like imbued with since like growing up in like this like Ford Foundation created public education system and then fed into like various other I guess ideological schools and colleges, like that then just go like, actually, you know, like the founding fathers are much worse than you thought or whatever. None of this is like, yeah, has any real connection to like actual history. It's like all simulation. So, you know, they put in that statue. They should just do like the real heroes, like make statues of like Mickey Mouse. We can have like Jedi statues around, or like, we'll do a SpongeBob statue. Like, that's like what the real values are in America. Like at this point, like this idea that anyone's pretending to like really give a shit about history.
Well, the thing is they're not like these statues. They're at this point, they're not the centerpiece of our civilization. I mean, it's still obviously, if it's a bad, I mean, I think it's a terrible thing what they're doing. It's to vandalizing historic artifacts, because it's important. I mean, it's important to have them there as a sense of history. But basically what you're saying is they're sort of there more, they're basically there as a museum, but they're not the really, like, they're not kind of the center.
No, we live in a
civilization.
Museum.
Yeah.
We already live in a museum, right? Like we're already tourists in our own country. Like, as a Indian Bronson said this to me, and I keep thinking about it. He's like, we're all trans because, like, you know, it's like America. Like, we identify as a country. Like, we identify, yeah, as like this. But it's just not. None of this exists anymore. Like, we're a free trade zone governed by a bunch of like different corporations and, you know, corporate interests that have totally captured like the media established, like, to just like, so effectively, but that people are like incapable, it takes forever to like
in the past, like a political movement was a more, if you could use the word term organic, like an organic tribe. It just seems like political movements, whether it's MAGA or Antifa, they're all just like brands.
Yeah, and there's a degree of, largely, I think there is still some organicism to certain political movements in the country, obviously, but largely there is a kind of, there's a layer of abstraction on, you know, taking an ideology or a position upon yourself, like, I'm going to be MAGA now, you know. There's a level of abstraction where you just kind of buy into some package that's external to your interests.
It's what we call identity politics, right? And, like, yeah, what are all these identities? They're, like, consumer demographics, and, like, these days, it's like everyone's ideology is like those, you know, on Facebook, how they're like advertise like a shirt that's like literally like a shirt that's designed for particularly you, where it's like, yeah, I'm a gun-toting redneck who loves Depeche Mode or whatever, based off of like whatever your fucking likes are. That's like how ideology functions now, is like everyone's like, you know, like I'm a. I'm trying to think of an absurd one off the top of my head, but you'll be like, I'm like a neo-Buddhist fascist.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah,
yeah.
Possibilities are endless. I mean, but we kind of think about it in these terms, and we're kind of aware of the, you know, the degrees of abstraction and ideology that happen. But I mean, the majority of Americans probably still aren't in that mindset. They still kind of think,
yeah, no, they're hopeless.
Something more straightforward is going. They're hopeless, you would say. Yeah, I mean, that's what I wonder. I mean, I think, from a conservative or even further right perspective, they might agree that like these statues don't really mean anything anymore, and that the cultural kind of destruction that's we're seeing now happened a long time ago anyway. But from that more conservative or right wing perspective, I think a lot of people, the hope for a lot of people would be that this would somehow wake people up.
To do what?
What would you say to that? What to do? What is right? I mean, form some kind of collective right wing conservative movement.
How that?
Yes, we already got that with Trump.
Because I remember part of the reason Trump got elected was because of some of the BLM protests back in 2015. That was a factor. Yeah, I mean, that was a factor. So it was just kind of like, are we going to keep going in cycles? They'll say, oh, the left did all these terrible things, so we're just going to vote in more Republicans, and then maybe like the left finds something appalling about MAGA, and then they're saying, I'm going to vote for, I mean, Joe Biden will like bring us back to normalcy.
It's like it's like how the party system works, and like, you know, you have to, the parties are corporate entities, like they're corporations, you know, they have headquarters, they have employees, they've got a lot of employees, and they have deals with like particular interest groups and lobbyists, like to represent certain interests and to like fit that into the platform. It's like all of these things are like, you know, this is like how real politics actually works. So it's like, oh, we're going to have this like grassroots movement that's going to do like, how are you going to do that? Like in what, like, you know, you're going to have to make a deal at a certain point. Right. So the thing about Trump that's interesting is that like, or like part of the reason he's interesting is that he was like very kind of like explicit about this. Everyone kind of like already knows that he's just like a deal maker and that he has like no real ideology. I mean, he was a Democrat his whole life. And then he's like, yeah, I'm going to like run as a Republican. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, he does all this stuff. And then people are then like surprised later. And it's like, he's really just like a conservative, like neoliberal, you know? And like, what's Joe Biden? He's like also like a kind of more like conservative neoliberal who just has like a different set of alliances. You know, he's like probably more aligned with like the CIA, right? Where so like the only reason why I could support Trump is because it seems like the CIA hates him, and that's a pretty good heuristic for at least he's gonna fuck with the CIA for a few years.
Yeah, he's still pretty funny too, just in general.
Yeah, I said back in 2016 before the election, I was like, he's already been president, because like at the time, like he was more popular in the news than Obama was, and Obama was like still president. Everyone like forgot that Obama was even the president at that time.
Well, yeah, again, simulacra. News makes reality.
Logo, what do you mean by a post-establishment worldview, like rejecting these terms like pro, anti, for, or against a certain policy or ideology?
I mean, like the more you define your sense of self as like relating to these things that these like other like ideological movements, like that's not really a way of removing yourself from looking at the situation in a more like more objective fashion. That's just a way of like you know, you fit yourself into the same system by like playing a role within it. Now you're like the antagonist to the bad guy ideology or whatever. And then that's like, you know, it's like, oh, like we also define ourselves as antagonist to bad guy ideology. Like this is like literally like what Antifa defines itself as. They're like fascism. That's bad guy ideology. Mm-hmm. Where
basically so like the political dichotomy of the second half of the 20th century, the conservatives were anti-communist, and then the liberals define themselves in opposition to fascism.
They're like anti-communist, right? So you could say like there's not really like there's like Antifa and there's anti-Antifa. Like then it's like what's Fa? Like who are the fascists? And it's like it turns out that it's like, you know, this the deep state, right? But that's like not but like so it's like, oh wait, do we both like these people? Like the kind of entrenched like political powers?
Oh,
it's like,
yeah.
No, we actually both hate these fucking people. That's interesting. Like why are we like divided on all these like identity lines to like, you know, fighting over things that don't matter. Like we're fighting over all these like non-issues. And it's like, because this is like, you know, we like doing it. We have fun doing it. We like consuming the media about it. It's really profitable to like put out media that's like part of this like, you know, fake battle. It's like all pro wrestling. Like it's really all stagecraft.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of view it as just a tragic aspect of I hesitate to make it such a big statement. A tragic element of human nature that they just care so much more about like this identity kind of stuff than like really thinking more pragmatically about where their interests lie.
Well, you were mentioning Indian Bronson on Twitter, and he basically advocates is rejecting electoral politics and just focusing on building up your own communities and your own institutions.
Yeah, that's how people win, right? Like, okay, so if Henry Ford was like, I'm going to donate all the money I made from, like, that I started, like, here, and I'm going to give it to this political candidate, like, way back in his life, like, he would have had no impact on the world whatsoever. Like, the truth of the matter is that if you actually want to have an impact on the world, like, you have to be one of these, like, sociopathic, like, oligarchs, right? Like, you have to accumulate a lot of capital, and you're doing this, like, not based out of, like, the goodness of your heart, but just, like, you know, pragmatic, like, economic decisions, and then you like accumulate capital, and then you can like actually impose things. But I also like have a kind of Tolstoyan view of this, where I think that the more you do that, the like less free you kind of become as a subject. Like that's, you're more and more conditioned by like your possessions and like the interests of your possessions or your assets, and that kind of also has like a warping effect on like your person. Like I don't know, I feel like it's like Jesus said, right? What about the rich man? It's harder for him to get into heaven than to get through a camel through the eye of a needle. Like same thing, like, you know, the more you have of these things, like
But didn't Indian Bronson, he was also talking about kind of, and obviously the category of white American, that's pretty broad. That's a lot of different subgroups within that. But he talked about how, you know, basically how different groups of white Americans should start kind of, you know, looking out for their own more essentially, and kind of just understanding themselves as a minority even, which I think comes... would be a really painful process for a lot of Americans.
Yeah,
I don't think it comes naturally to a lot of white Americans.
It doesn't.
So
they think,
but
well,
it does seem like that is the way of the future.
Your average white American, like from the working class to the upper middle class, on both the liberal side and the conservative side, they just think of themselves as America, whether it's the kind of MAGA boomer of American patriotism. Or the white liberal who sees America as having systematic racism in favor of whites, they see themselves as like the dominant group in America. It's just sort of like thinking in terms more of as a minority, or more in terms of how a diaspora would act, like the how a diaspora or different immigrant groups in the United States act. So yeah, Indian Bronson. I think he is from an Indian background, so his advice to white people is to start acting more like the way Indian diaspora would.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I just wanted to say that I think the commonality I see between, like, the kind of, you know, MAGA conservatives, the commonality between them and the more, like, center-left, for lack of a better term, neoliberal Joe Biden crowd of like, white liberals is what you mentioned. I mean, both of them... are pretty allergic to the idea, you know, that there isn't some like cohesive America that they represent.
Yeah, America at this point, as Logo said earlier in the show, it's basically just an economic zone.
Yeah, and I mean, you're talking about like people like identifying themselves as minorities or whatever, but I don't know if that would really work. I don't know if that is like a good enough coalition, because like they're like, it's not like the people who already are like, oh, we're making a coalition of like minority rights or whatever, like they all just like, you know, dissolve into section like factional conflict within themselves anyway. And for a lot of white Americans, like, you know, I grew up in a 98% white town, like, you know, there's like whole states that are like majority white, and a lot of the times they're like have some of the more progressive politics, right? Like that's kind of one of the funny ironies. Like you look at Vermont's politics,
oh, yeah,
and you
for
look
sure.
at like demographics. So it's like, what's the real like what is the real like white culture, quote unquote?
Oh,
that people
yeah.
are supposed to like.
I
rally
don't know
around?
Exactly. I mean, my interpretation of I guess Indian Bronson's point that he made on the show he did with you in Combot, and I guess he's made on Twitter as well, isn't so much like you know, white identity politics or something like that, as you know, just his advice being you know, just look out, you know, start families, you know, build what you can, like not identity
just
politics.
Be normal fucking
yeah.
people, like yeah. I don't know. Like right, like, you know, you're not gonna really do anything, but like the best you can do is like whatever you can do within your local sphere of like activity, right? So it's
yeah,
like it has nothing to do with the news cycle.
The you know, I was pretty when the rise in protests were happening, I had a much more strong, visceral, emotional reaction. It sounds like you did. But one thing I've been thinking about since then is like, realistically, what any of this stuff, as much as I might not like it, what does any of this have to do with my life? And the answer is almost none of it. And I do think, you know, for as much as I dislike a lot of the, you know, politically correct, et cetera, dialogue, it doesn't really have to do with me and, like, what I can do with my life. And I think focusing on what you can build and just do and survive is much more fruitful than engaging in this kind of politics.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like, that's all you can really do. That's, like, that's like kind of the sad thing is, like, how a lot of even, like, trying to say that is, like, becomes politicized.
There is a political, like, I think, you know, you could say there is a political angle to it, but it's a better way of thinking about politics than I guess the more overtly.
I think to take a view of politics that is more in some ways more materialistic, like what can this politician do for the material needs of myself, my family, my community, or my greater tribe, rather than vote supporting an ideological brand.
Yeah, it's like you could, it's like you, so you're talking about, like, you know, you can have your more impact on, like, local elections and stuff, but I don't know who the fuck, like, my local representatives are. Like, I don't really care. Like, I don't think anyone really, like, you know, it's like, oh, I want to have, like, civic engagement or whatever. It's like, well, you can. I mean, when I grew up, one of my first jobs, right, was filming, like, the local town hall meetings and stuff and running, like, the local cable network. And so they have meetings all the fucking time. Like, there's all these meetings, tons of meetings. They're open to the public. You can come and, like, check out what these, like, bureaucrats are talking about all day. And, like, you could have input on it. But that's fucking sucks. Like, no one actually wants to do that. And, like, you know, the national politics or, like, the mega politics, the spectacular politics, they're so much more entertaining than, like, actual boring, like, civic engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, yeah, serves the point as, like, kind of professional sports entertainment, the bread and circus. Would you say that we need more mercantilism as opposed to neoliberalism, which has been a complete disaster?
Yeah, I think free trade in general is, like, a completely, like, horrific policy, and it's, like, really, like, if you want to talk about something that's, like, totally against, like, the American values, like, you know, free trade is, like, up there with them, right? Like, this is, like, from the founding, the note, like, you know, Hamilton's report on manufacturers, there's, like, a huge, like, debate with, like, this is, like, one of the foundings of, like, the first debates about the Constitution, like, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. And it's, like, really, like, this is the irony of, like, the Democrats are the real racist thing, because it does have some, there is a little bit to that, because the kind of, like, agrarian, like, politics of, like, state, like, you know, regional autonomy and these sorts of things, this was, like, all, like, for the benefit of, like, having free trade and, like, the slave trade, specifically to trade with the continents to, like, make a lot of money for, like, the slave oligarchs in the South who, like, didn't want, they considered, like, you know, industrialism to be, like worse than slavery, right? They were saying that, like, people working in the mills and stuff were worse off than the slaves, and they kind of wanted to, like, halt, like, technological development at that certain level of agrarianism, but it kind of moved on beyond that. So, and but when you impose, like, free trade in, like, an industrial sense, what you do is you just get rid of your industry. Like, all your industry goes overseas, which is exactly what happened here. I mean, the Chinese don't do free trade. We, like, like, that's why they have all the factories.
Are you still think Andrew Yang or policy or UBI or just general kind of outside the box thinking like that, do you still have hope that that could be a force in American politics in the future?
I mean, the tragedy is that, like, any, like, if you don't get a kind of, like, crazy person to put in a very specific version of it, what you get is instead, like, this is just how American policy works, right? It's like, even with, like, Obamacare, right? Like, say you were, like, going on, you're like, oh, we're gonna get, like, universal health care. It's like, no, it's actually just this, like, really complicated, mm-hmm. like, further, like, free market of blah blah blah. So, like, these sort of, the idea of, like, universal benefits, which is, like, the foundation of, like, what a government's supposed to do, is, like, provide universal benefits in the form of, like, infrastructure, like, you know, this is all in the fucking Constitution. No one really cares about the Constitution anyway, though. But, like, anything that would create, like, a kind of universal sense of, like, universal benefit, I think would be extremely good just for, like, the cohesiveness of the country, especially, and, like, you know, like, it's not like your current welfare system's fucking good, and it doesn't really make sense, like, any of the, like, our whole society fucking sucks because it doesn't, like, invest in itself. Like, it reinvests in, you know, the biggest capital, the monopolies, the oligarchs.
Yeah.
And
no, I mean,
you know, we fight for scraps.
I was a Yang supporter, you know, last year, and I know you were as well. And you know, I've gone cold on him.
He just went really cringe with the math hats. Like,
he did go in a woke direction as opposed to his original. His original message, like in his book, The War on Normal People, is a more kind of a gray tribe message, if you know what that means. But yeah, because the problem is that group's not organized, so the organization is in the blue tribe, so that's where he has to go.
Yeah, but that aside, I still think his general points that some version of UBI, universal benefit, as Logo said, I mean, I think it's inevitable that we'll have to move towards that eventually. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a whole concept of kind of, I think it's been described as, like, plutocratic socialism, where, like, the oligarchy controls most of the wealth, the jobs are automated, people live in these tiny pods, the meme where they eat Soylent to subsistence living, and then there's, like, a UBI where it's just enough to, yeah, just enough to basically subsistence living so they don't starve, so that's kind of, mean, that is a kind of like science fiction scenario, but it could
that's
be.
That's how we already live, though.
Yeah, yeah, like, I mean, it's like, not just science fiction. Just it is basically, we're already headed in that direction.
Well, that's sort of like what Kojève is getting at in the end of history thesis when he talks about like the animalization of like American life, right? Where like people are becoming more and more like, you know, like animals, right? Like, and like this idea would be essentially that like, you know, we'd be kept like pets by machines. And this is even like part of it was like in the hippie movement. They talk, there's a god, is it Brodigan? It was like a poet where he talks about like, you know, like all watched over by machines of loving grace.
Oh, yeah.
This is like what communism is, though. This is what it's the whole, this is like what Marx was talking about when he's saying that, like, you know, hyper-capitalism, like, develops into this sort of situation. Because, you know, like, let's say you lived on a universal basic income in your pod or whatever. I mean, why would it have to be a pod? Like, you could live pretty much anywhere, right? And what would you do? Like, whatever the fuck you want to do, I guess. Like, that's probably what's going to happen. And, like, you know, maybe that'll lead to people like, I guess you could also go work for the inner party or the outer party or whatever, but for the most part, like, what it, like, I don't know what else is going to happen. Like, what seems like a challenge to this sort of norm? Like, I don't really see one. Like, at any time I do, it seems to like somehow get absorbed and then like reinforce the trends leading in that direction.
Well,
anyway,
there's like populist, right-wing populists like Tucker Carlson, or some left-wing populists like some Bernie supporters who would want to maybe oppose automation. And then there's for like the utopian version of things, fully automated space communism, luxury space communism.
Well, I was just thinking, like, you know, you think about the pods and stuff, but like this is already like the majority of people on welfare are white people who like live in like trailer parks or like, you know, housing projects. So this is already like a reality for the most part. I guess like the real threat, right, is like the threat to like the absorption of what we'd call like middle class wealth. And this has been happening for a long time, right, where, you know, the boomers, right, they had access to like basically a middle class, like, you know, they had access to like buying property and stuff like that. But like this, as this whole economy became like so much more financialized, like things are just like, you know, it's actually like for the most part, like you're getting conned if you buy a house in America because like the, it's not really that profit, like you'd be better off renting for the most part, just like on a long unless you're like, you know, you're gonna live there for forever or something. But that doesn't really happen that much anymore. People move a lot more now.
Yeah, no, Robert and I actually just kind of finished writing a sort of article about that theme of the disappearing middle class, but it almost runs deeper, just a completely disappearing way of life, which it was the middle class American way of life involving, you know, home ownership and children and steady work. I mean, I guess there's, with everything, there's so much change, you know, happening. But I would say that kind of disappearance strikes at the core.
There is some theory that life now is literally a simulation, like Baudrillard said, but maybe the end game is that we'll all be hooked up to VR permanently.
Think about, like, this is like the more terrifying thing. It's like, what if like that's just like what most people want, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it seems that way. Like, and it seems like, you know, you can, like, I don't know what happened to me that like this seems bad to me, but it doesn't seem that way to most people.
Yeah. If it's at the point where the quality of life is just gradually getting worse and worse and worse, and the VR technology is so immense that it can produce a really euphoric experience. And yeah, definitely. I guess one kind of interesting thing about a lot of this civil unrest is there is this kind of like frog in the boiling pan theory. And I remember the show I did with Brandon Adamson back, I think it was January, about the predictions for the 2020s and about like how political dissidents kind of romanticize this collapse scenario. And they have these kind of like copes that they'll be the ones like seizing power. And it does seem like the trend has been just kind of like gradual, like people getting used to the frog in the boiling pan theory. And then you had like these big events happening recently and people acting like this is it. But maybe this is just one kind of minor event, and maybe we will continue just on the whole frog in the boiling pan theory, even though it does seem like we're in a national crisis.
Yeah, this is something that I thought was really good in Blade Runner 2049, is kind of it dispelled the sort of collapse narrative, by, because like it's all based off of like 10 years after the blackout, right? Like, so there's this huge blackout and it's like, oh, like what happened? And it's like, things kind of just like got back to normal, but like with worse conditions.
What Michel Welbeck, actually, he flat out said that basically after the pandemic, things will go back to usual, but only shittier.
Yeah. No. I agree. I mean, it's a hard pill to swallow, and it's kind of depressing. Especially, I think one of the big weaknesses of people who are interested in dissident politics is their thinking is often tinged with a kind of utopianism or a kind of dramatic, like, this is going to be the moment when things finally break and the illusion is punctured and reality seeps back.
A tragic
history
optimism.
Does not. Yeah, totally.
For like a sundering, they're optimistic that there will be like this cannot hold, right? Like there's going to be a part where like things are just going to have to split apart.
Yeah,
right?
And like I think the best you get is like 2016, and you know Trump got elected and it was this big crazy moment, and you know the right people were shocked and horrified, right? But at the end of the day, it doesn't really change much.
Yeah, where nothing's changed. Really?
Yeah.
Well, we were talking earlier about the autonomous zone in Chaz, about how it's kind of, it's not like a major, it's not really seriously undermining the system, it's more symbolic to kind of blow off steam. And then the whole call to like defund the police, like I don't see that happening. I don't see them abolishing or defunding the police, but I see them more kind of maybe co-opting the police like into a more kind of woke agenda. So on Twitter, you made the comparison to what happened in the past with, like, Irish gangs.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, like, it's really funny, but, like, the creation of police forces has a lot to do with, like, legitimizing, like, recent immigrant populations. So, like, this will probably just, like, and that's what they're saying, right? We need to audit the diversity of police. That's what it's going to ultimately become, more than defunding. They're going to say we need to have, like, better representation in the police. So that's what's going to actually happen, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense, because like the police are the ones who they maintain the current power structure, so they're not giving that up.
That's been a big thing, right, on just like televisual, like police procedurals and shit, is there's just been like a lot more black characters and black Panthers.
Personal experience with that I don't want to dox myself, but yeah, no, there's a lot of cop shows. Yeah, and like Law & Order SVU is another great example.
About
yeah.
Law & Order SVU, and I mean, ironically, there are some leftists calling it to be canceled, like they did. They're talking about canceling Cops in a lot of cop shows. But if you watch that show, obviously, like we talked about that episode they did about incels, which is pretty ridiculous. But there is, like, funny. If you watch it carefully, what is fascinating about that show is the fusion. There is a woke theme, but it's not like woke in a civil libertarian sense. Like it does glorify state power, even in a cruel sense.
It gently suggests that state power could be used to kind of defend woke goals, basically.
Remember the presidential debates? I think Kamala Harris, like her criminal justice record came into question from the progressives, but I do think like she probably epitomizes those qualities more than any other political figure.
For sure.
Yeah, she might be the VP for the Biden campaign. We'll see. Like, I don't know if that would even float well. Like, I don't know. The Democrats seem like they've lost their ability to, like, control part of what they've manifested in this sort of, like, like, they're still trying to figure out the right way to run these sorts of things. I think that they're going to, like, win in the long term, just, like, demographically, probably, because the Republicans, like, are abysmal. I mean, until the Republican becomes, like, the Latino Party, which probably will. That's how it looks, though. That seems to be like the most popular demographic amongst, like, you know, like if you look at the far right meetups or whatever, it's like mostly Latinos, and then you look at abolish the police ones, and it's all like these white people, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
A little off topic, but why do you think that satire is so hated in its like purest form?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with like people like. The internet has really fucked up people's ability to like understand things as being constructed as opposed to like being like authentic, right? Because like people use it for both. Like they'll just post like things that they actually think, and then like they'll also like use it to like say something that they don't think, right? Or like to create something that's not like in their voice, but is like serving a different rhetorical goal. And these like the kind of inability to differentiate these things is hugely popular thing to. Like, that's what trolling is to a lot of, like, you know, it's like fucking with people's, their like hermeneutics, right? By like making them read something a certain way. And like satire, the whole goal is to juxtapose like what people actually believe with like what the effects of it are in the real world. Or like, you know, you have like, you know, you'll have, it's like satire is like having like a really fat person like talking about how you have to like work out all the time or whatever. Where it's like that sort of juxtaposition.
Or you've probably seen the show Nathan For You.
Nathan For You. He's the only real satirist.
The
alive,
thing about
right,
him is he Nathan Fielder is he does play off his own character. What's interesting is his character is kind of like he's sort of an incel. So there's his persona as a guy who's likable and intelligent, but he's also very socially. Yeah, I mean, I think he did struggle with social anxiety when he was younger, and he kind of, as an actor, he's more confident, so he picks up on that. And then there's just the whole thing where he goes and does this really, these business ideas, which are really outlandish. I guess the humor is that people don't, the business owners don't understand that it's satire, so the success of humor is, there is some kind of theme of conflict. So if you're probably seeing like Curb Your Enthusiasm is about like social conflict or socially awkward situations, and Nathan Fielder's humor is about like people misunderstanding something. So what I get from humor is there does have to be some kind of theme of conflict, and satire, either satire or situational humor, can get at that.
The thing is like a satire of an ideology, if done well enough, is like you can't tell the difference between it and the actual like production of the ideology, which is why like people on the right actually hate satire too, but like, you know, people who are just like extremely ideologically possessed, because the whole point of satire is to show like all of these ideologies like in the world as being like absurd. Like that's the whole point. Like, you know, it's like an encyclopedic tradition where you're trying to look at all of the different perspectives that exist in the various classes of society and show how they're like self-contradictory. And like the view you're supposed to get from satire is like that position of looking at all of those things and seeing how they're all contradictory. But you can't do that if you identify with one of the characters, right?
Okay, I do hear right-leaning people talk about how wokeness has destroyed comedy. And if you look at it like SNL, for instance, like it's like the least funniest show now. I mean, I think the main reason is because they're not able to get out satire. Because like wokeness is such it's a kind of religious like moralistic ideology, and it has been a disaster for comedy, even like liberal, like more liberal comedians have made that point. Like after the whole kind of like Me Too incident, how like Louis C.K. was purged, but comedy has really gone downhill because of
they
that.
They became absorbed. Well, like the thing about America, right, and like one of the most like unique things about like the 20th century and like the post-war society that we're like still in is the weaponization of like entertainment and like entertainers within like the propaganda machine. Because like if you're talking about like SNL, like SNL, like even a couple of decades ago, like or whatever, like when they had Norm Macdonald on, like he was very edgy, and like the idea that his jokes then are like super edgy is like kind of funny, compared to like how much edgier comedy got in some ways before it then like got pulled back fairly recently in like the wokeness wars or whatever. But the main scolds for like comedy back in the day were like, you know, the Christian like fundamentalists, like, you know, like the kind cultural right. And that's the real change, is that it's coming in the opposite direction.
One thing I do predict we will see a kind of like cultural avant-garde that would include like I think comedy will be a big part. And I do think in the past, like, more kind of normie conservatives have tried to create like explicitly political culture and entertainment and even comedy, and they've like completely failed. But I do think like because like the moralistic narrative of the wokeness is going too extreme, I think we will see, we could see like the cultural avant-garde coming more from the right-wing sides. Though on the other hand, I think those terms right, left, and right, we should just like discard. But anyhow,
yeah, they're kind of worthless because it's like, you know, like, are people really on the right on the same team with, like, you know, like the boomer conservatives that they hate or whatever? Yeah. Or, like, are they on the same team as, like, AIPAC, even though, like, the people that they support are obviously on the same team as AIPAC? Like, obviously not. So I don't know how much of it is, like, right wing or whatever, but that's, like, you know, these sorts of judgments are all, like, they say much more about someone's ideology than it does about whoever they're talking about, like, how they decide to classify it. Because, you know, you look at, like, Joe Rogan, right? Like, you know, a leftist will say, like, oh, Joe Rogan is, like, a fascist or something. And then people will be like, oh, no, like, Joe Rogan just, like, you know, he's just, like, a normie libertarian from, like, a more, like, right position.
Yeah, anti-wokeness, as it were, and even that I don't want to reify too much, but that's kind of becoming its own tribe of people, and it almost doesn't matter whether you're more quote-unquote progressive, quote-unquote conservative. It's there's just kind of agreed upon rejection of the value system of wokeness unites a certain tribe of people who may actually have very little in common with each other.
We're going to talk about, like, taking, like, the Kerouac pill. Logo's obviously interested in Jack Kerouac, but it's this idea, like we talked about earlier, the concept of the end of history, like the concept of being the poet of the end of history.
Yeah, so Kerouac's a great figure who's, like, extremely misunderstood and totally ill-treated by almost everyone. And the only people who seem to read Kerouac are people that he probably would have despised, like, is, like, one of the major ironies, right? Like, because they'll, like, read, like, On the Road, but they don't read, like, any of his later books or even his earlier ones. But he was, like, actually, like, you know, he was actually, like, a real artist. Like, he was trying to write, like, his version of, like, a Proustian remembrance of his own life and times by, like, tracking his entire life in, like, novel form where, like, all these characters are consistent. And he was, like, raised Catholic, and he was, like, at the end of his life, he identified as, like, very conservative. He hated the hippies. He didn't like what his, like, beat generation, like, he was trying to, like, really actually just create a kind of, like, very idealistic, like, set of, like, poets who were, like, trying to, like, you know, like, view the world and, like, you know, like, preserve the beauty in it and, like, whatever it is. Then, like, the beat generations come from, like, the root of, like, the Beatitudes, like, the beatific, like, Beatrice and, like, a Dantean sense. But, like, all of this was, like, lost over time as he then got, like, people are saying, like, oh, you created, like, the hippies or the beat movement or whatever. So, like, you know, you can see him at the end of his life, like, he's kind of, like, depressed and drunk seeing, like, what happened to what he thought was, like, a promising thing in America. And he's, like, on William F. Buckley, and he's, like, talking about, like, smoking weed and watching the McCarthy hearings. So it's like he is, like, a very, like, contradictory figure that people, and it's like the same thing happens with, like, basically all of the interesting writers, really, is because, like, if you want to actually be interesting, you kind of have to ride the dialectic. You kind of have to, like, try to see, like, from the different perspectives that exist, as opposed to being like, I'm aligning myself with, like, this ideology. Like, that's a great way to, like, make your stuff have a shelf life.
Yeah, the other concept I wanted to bring up with the Kerouac pill, and I think you were posting about this a little bit, Logo. Forgive me if this is a reduction in what you're saying or an oversimplification, but there's an interesting kind of relationship between the Beatniks and Jack Kerouac in particular, and the sort of Oswald Spengler concept of the second spiritualism. Because the one thing that Kerouac would have in common, both with sort of left-wing hippie types, but also and one thing he might have in common both with sort of left-wing hippie types and sort of more postmodern conservatives is kind of just a recognition that there's something very spiritually gutted about, you know, post-industrial society, and kind of a search for I don't want to oversimplify, but, you know, some sort of meaning kind of at the fringes of society. Does any of this resonate
Absolutely. I was just gonna let you finish, but that's all, like, on 100% on point. Like, that's also one of my favorite things to bring up is, like, a lot of people, like, you know, they'll get into, like, an author or whatever, and they'll be like, oh man, like, you know, this author must have, like, hated this other person at the time who, like, I haven't read. And then you'll find out that, like, you know, they're friends, or, like, you know, mm-hmm. they actually got along greatly, and, like, you know, they shared a lot of the same ideas in a lot of ways. So, like, that's one of the things about like the new right, and they're like reading Spengler and they're like, oh man, like these like fucking hippies and liberals like took this away from me. And it's like Jack Kerouac was telling you, was the one who told all of them to read Spengler. Like Jack Kerouac was reading Goethe and Proust and like a bunch of things that are really good that you probably haven't read. And his whole thing, right, was like the second religiousness and like in like the outskirts of America was like he was trying to like envision like America is sort of like the place for like the next Grail quest, right? Where it's like certain like these pilgrimages across America with all of these like strange characters, like the Canterbury Tales, like he's with like Dean Moriarty and all these other like strange people, and they're all just like trying to find like what America is. They're just trying to find like the Holy Grail in the new world, and it takes on this sort of like other tone because it's like in this like industrial hellscape. But you know, you can even think of like Philip K. Dick sort of understated himself in this way, where he was talking about how like he was imagining, like, you know, America at the time, post-war America, as being, like, the same conditions as, like, the times of Jesus Christ under the Roman Empire. Like, imposition of, like, that level, that, like, spiritual level, but, like, also, like, within the the conditions of modernity is, like, was, like, his whole project. Like, trying, his whole thing is, like, a Grail quest. That's what he was looking for.
Absolutely. And for me, this part of the conversation relates back to the earlier part of our conversation, because for me, doing soul searching in light of all these crises that have happened with Corona and then the, you know, civil unrest and what have you, I think that, you know, seeing your tweets about that, and you know, I have a novel coming out hopefully pretty soon. I know you've written a novel, which I'm actually reading now, and Robert's a novelist as well. With everything going on, clashing ideologies, I think the most solace I can find is in the idea of going back to a sort of creativity, you know, creative work, writing, just kind of focusing on that. So
that's like what I was like always hoping for this sphere, was that it was going to be like there was going to be like a burgeoning of like sort of like try to like attempts at like creative action, right? And like it kind of comes in spurts, but it seems like, you know, like it's a lot harder to make something like that. Like writing a book's hard. Like I'm writing another one right now, and I have been for a while. It's going to be quite a bit longer, and it's been taking me a while, and it's hard to write. It really is. It's a lot harder than it is to tweet, and it's a lot harder than it is to like have comments on the news cycle. But like you also want to like write so that people can read it, and you want people to know that it exists. Otherwise no one's going to read it, right?
Yeah.
To kind of balance this, and that was true even in those times, right? You know, Jack Kerouac, like, he had his manuscripts for a while, but, like, you know, all these authors, they have to, like, break into, like, public awareness somehow, and that's usually with, like, a kind of more thorough engagement with, like, the topics of the time, I guess.
Before I wrap things up, Logo, do you want to plug, like, the subject matter of your upcoming novel?
It's going to be, like, I'm considering it, like, the... It's going to be orange. That's like, I don't want to give away too much, but it's going to be like very much like the opposite of the first one. I'm trying to write something less like hellish. So I wrote like a book about hell pretty much. And I'm trying to write like more of like a kind of, it's kind of more like the Canterbury Tales, you know? That's why I've been reading Kerouac a lot again. I've been trying to like get in the vibe of what I've been working on. Trying to, and like, you know, I've been thinking a lot about America just in general and like the kind of, this sort of quest, this sort of like, you know, this strange new world that we're in.
Logo Daedalus, it has been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
And also, thanks, Matt.
Yeah, got a lot out of this conversation. Nice talking to you both.